Honourable Members, we have received under the apologies not very good news, the passing of the Minister's mother, which of course he is not able to attend today. I trust, Honourable Members, that you would agree with me that we share our condolences as a committee to the Minister on the loss of his mother, and that that would be conveyed to the Minister on our behalf. I'm sure you would agree with that. The Deputy Minister must then stand in for the Minister at the Cabinet Committee, where they are going to do one or other presentation. You would have seen him briefly, but I said to him that it's fine, he must go back to the Cabinet Committee and go and do that. Other than that, the apology of Honourable Bazzoli, of course, stands. Other than that, there aren't any other apologies. A word of special welcome back to Honourable Mbata. Members, our agenda today, I want to ask if we can't just change it around and we deal with the certificate matter first, and we can then have sufficient time to deal with the department's quarterly report to us here today. My understanding is that you will do a joint presentation. Is that correct, DJ? Okay, so we will have individual ones, and we will explain the context to that also. I trust this is in order, Honourable Members. I don't see any objections. DJ, to you, and you will guide us who will be doing that.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to Honourable Members. My colleagues from the department, Sita, as well as Umalusi. Yes, indeed, the presentation is a combined one because we are doing the same work, and it became a good wisdom that it is important for us to present one presentation that is going to talk to the entire value chain in respect to the production of the certificates for students within the TVET College sector. And to that effect, officials from all the three entities worked out and integrated all aspects of the presentation that would have to be brought to the attention of the Honourable Members into one. Now, I will ask then one of the officials. I understand that nothing is going to lead in that presentation, and then thereafter, when questions are asked, we all entertain them. Can I ask Nadine to take the committee through the presentation? I assume copies have been made available for the Honourable Members. All right,
thank you, Honourable Chair and Members. Our presentation will focus on two things, the certification and the diploma backlogs. The diploma backlogs is exclusively a DHET matter and has no business with CETA or the UMLUSI officials, but it is part of our presentation to give the update there as well. If we look at the certification, the update on the NCV certificates in terms of the backlog certificate process, we are left with 665 certificates that have yet to be issued, of which 657 are related to private centres that are in arrears to Umuluti, and that means that there are 8 certificates currently in process, and these will be still be resolved by the due date at the end of the 30th of June. CETA has also initiated a completeness test over and beyond the processing of the backlog certificates to ensure that any and every candidate who is worthy of a certificate does indeed get that certificate. This will work through the whole IT system and check that all candidates who meet the 7 subject rule for a level have been given a certificate. And this will also go a long way in addressing the conflicting reports as provided by the portfolio committee on colleges in oversight visits still saying that a large number of certificates are outstanding. In terms of the initial tests already conducted by CETA, approximately 200 records have been detected in their initial testing run, which will then be prioritised, and the numbers may fluctuate as the completeness checks are conducted and completed, but this will ensure that no candidate goes uncertified in the entire process. The colleges are also to log and track the certificates received, and those outstanding, and these lists will be submitted directly to the department via the colleges for further attention to ensure that no stone gets left unturned to ensure that everybody does indeed receive a certificate. In terms of the current NCD certificates for the last exam cycle in November, we previously reported that there were 5,812 still outstanding. It currently stands now at 5,304 for the recent cycle. This was due to several mock-ups that had to be conducted in the resulting process due to the missing data from colleges, incorrect data, incorrect raw marks, and the systems are being aligned now between CETA and Umuluti, and the data challenges being addressed on a technical level. This will also be resolved by the 30th of June. In terms of the native certificates, if we look back, dating back to 1991, 46,511 was the latest update received from CETA. That was after applying the business rule where a candidate has passed 4 subjects and therefore meets the requirements for a certificate. In terms of the way forward, if we look at 2015-11 onwards, which is currently 8,206, these certificates will also be resolved by the 30th of June. If we look at the earlier period, we are needing to carry out an analysis to determine how much data is missing so that we can see how quickly those earlier certificates will be resolved and to complete a risk analysis, a mitigation strategy, and a project plan based on all the cycles and the ongoing operations and findings in the data. In terms of the current exam cycle, November, 71,867 certificates were issued, of which a large volume of them were full certificates, 54,698, and the remaining 17,169 were subject certificates. If you look at the challenges experienced, just in a nutshell in terms of this process, and these will then relate to lessons learned and our systemic improvements we're implementing. If one of them was the quality of the data received from the colleges, the gaps and the errors in the data, those 999s, 777s, etc. Data processing errors in the resulting process itself on the IT system. The non-alignment between the 3 systems and the processes, that's between CETA, Umuluti and the department. Another challenge being the determination of the precise number of certificates outstanding and whether all certificates have indeed been issued. And finally, the non-payment of fees owed to Umuluti by the private colleges. If we then look at the systemic improvements regarding that, the principals are now deemed the chief examinations officer of their college, and as such, we require principals to sign off on the accuracy and completeness of data. And we do this to ensure that no results are released to college unless the data is 100% correct and complete. That's to ensure that there are no gaps in certificates going forward and that the data is indeed complete on the system by the time it comes to processing certificates. The weekly collaborative meetings have helped to fast track the resolution of any differences between the systems and the processes applied by the 3 parties. CETA is to establish a web-based system to enable candidates to register their complaints and track their progress, for example, with their certificates, and to assist the DHE to more efficiently manage the queries. And this will start, first of all, with an e-complaint facility. thereafter we'll go move on to e-inquiry and e-reporting functionality that still needs to be built. And between Umalusi and the DHET, we recently established a task team that is a permanent feature going forward to address specifically resulting in certification processes on a continuous and regular basis. Further systemic improvements is planned work sessions between the three parties prior to every exam cycle, well in advance, to ensure that dry runs are conducted, to ensure that any data anomalies are detected before an exam cycle and cleaned and sorted out before the exam, so that when we do run the exam, the resulting in the certification process is clean and there should be no problems with data. Also, exploring the implications of doing away with the subject certificates. The benefits could be that it's cost-saving and lessen the confusion with our full certificates. The development of our new IT system, we're now at the development phase and user testing will already start taking place in this year. It will be a data takeover process, and when the data process takes place, we will run a parallel with the current system to get it fixed and get it ready for implementation. And then the three parties have agreed on a standard operating procedure regarding the time frames and the processes to be implemented for the resulting certification of candidates in each and every examination cycle. And if we just look at a typical November exam cycle, that would mean that after you've released the results, if there were any data problems that arise, they should be resolved within the first month. The irregularities for that exam cycle should be concluded within 2 months. The remark recheck process also concluded within 2 months, so that all certification issues are dealt with in the third month, so that we can indeed release the certificates at the end of the third month after the publication of results. For example, if we look now currently at the MCV supplementary exam, where we released the results on the 26th of April, all processes on track, the above processes, to ensure that the certificates are released by the 26th of July, which is 3 months after the publication. So that will be a standard turnaround time frame, a standard operating procedure with which we have to adhere, and we are on track for the supplementary certification process. That concludes then on certificates. If we then look at the national end diplomas, this is currently a responsibility of the department as delegated to the department by the QCTO. The applications are processed on request and are not affected by the certification process of NCV and NATED. The backlog is due to a large volume of applications received at the time. When we last reported to the committee, Mr. Patel indicated to the committee chair that there were 20,475 national end diploma applications in backlog. We've reduced that to 8,245, and we will be using screening rubrics developed in conjunction with the QCTO to conduct the final screening workshop next weekend, the 22nd to the 24th of June, to conclude this last batch of national end diplomas that are in backlog. And all of these diploma applications will have been resolved by the 30th of July. If we have a look at the challenges there, one of the big challenges when processing a national end diploma application is that you have to rely on a letter produced by the mentor or the workplace, the employer, and you are not sure about the honesty of what is contained in that letter. So a lot of verification goes into place, phoning up, checking, and making extra sure that that candidate indeed did do what is typed on that letter that is presented with the application. So that's a shortcoming at the moment. So that is what takes an extraordinary amount of time to do that per application. Also, criteria have not strictly been adhered to in the past. Our resulting units have dealt with it amongst their other responsibilities until 2013, and the applications are not fully screened by the colleges prior to submission to the department. The SACWA also in 2013 registered the National End Diploma as a full qualification on NQF Level 6, which also added to the challenges in processing of diplomas. If we have a look at what is happening to improve the process so that we don't fall into this situation again, we established in the department a new unit in 2014 to manage the processing of national end diplomas exclusively and not to do any other work. We have worked with the QCTO and established screening criteria. We have trained some subject specialists already to QCTO conducts a sample quality assurance of the applications that we've processed. And further to that, the QCTO is busy with the development of workplace logbooks to guide the college, the student, and the employer on the experiential workplace activities that all students should engage in while in the workplace for that particular diploma. The department is to finalize a national guideline, including the QCTO logbooks, and we will then train college-based officials during the latter half of 2017 on how to screen and how to implement the logbooks. And obviously, because there are already students in the system who are already in the workplace, this will be phased in only for new students entering the workplace from the 1st of January 2018 to allow, to not disadvantage those who are already in workplaces. And that is the end of our presentation on those two matters, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members, it's over to yourselves. There seem to be no questions. Next report. Oh. Honourable Thunderbestes and Honourable Killian, Honourable Mkadime, Honourable Mbata, Honourable Mpunu, and Honourable Kitana, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I firstly want to say I'm really grateful for the progress that we've seen. Thank you for the report. Also feedback that I've received from our colleges point indeed to a much improved situation with the issuing of the certificates. But I think there are two things. The first one is we need to really understand what went wrong, because particularly when it comes to the NATET and the diploma certificates, you know, these things have been around for 30 years. And for many years, even when we were sitting with these small colleges before the merger, things worked a lot better than what we've seen over the last number of years. So if we blame the colleges for the quality of the data, I just find it very strange now that we've got all these expensive head offices and dedicated administration divisions, exam administration at the head office, etc. What caused the quality of the data to deteriorate when in the past it used to be, it seems, a lot better? The second one is, you know, once you understand the problem, you can start solving the problem. Are we already preparing for future challenges? I'm particularly also interested not only in college certificates, but in, say, for example, our adult qualification, adult matric that we are currently also introducing as a department. Are we being, or can you assure us as a portfolio committee that you are being proactive in that also in these other programs, certificates are being issued well in time, adult education, particularly the new adult matric. And then just the last one, you spoke about the problems with the applications for the diploma. What percentage of our N4 graduates then continue to the diploma level? And is there not a high fallout because students do not always know that they can qualify for that diploma? And what is the department doing to ensure that as many of our young people eventually continue to receive the diploma? Because I would think that a majority of our N6 graduates do get the necessary practical experience, but because they kind of get lose contact with the college, that many of them just don't apply and don't know that they are actually eligible for a level 6 qualification. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you very much for the presentation, and also I would like to add my voice to say that we welcome significant progress that was made. Chair, and if there was ever an example of why we need a democracy consisting of different arms of government. This is that example. Because I do believe that without the intervention of Parliament in this matter, this would probably have taken much longer to resolve. I do believe that with sufficient pressure from this portfolio committee, there was adequate progress made between, because you see, this is always the danger of government. They operate, different sections of government operate in silence. And we have managed to break those walls between CETA, the DAGT, and Umalusi. So I think it's also good to know that the officials involved put aside all their issues and said, let's focus together to get the certificates out. So I think that's good progress. Secondly, I somehow differ a little bit with Honourable von der Westhuizen statement, but I can understand where he comes from. What we have is we have had sectors in South Africa, certain areas, where the management of colleges were of a higher sort of intervention basis than in others. I mean, if you only manage a few, you know, from a provincial side, a few technical colleges, and you don't have a vast number, different campuses, etc., etc., you may not see the entire picture. But what is of a concern, and I would like to ask the department, if we go forward and we see that we will take on board other colleges as well, do we now realize that we need to put in the necessary systems, procedures, standards, and all of that, in fact, in anticipation? And we cannot even commence without the right systems. So the incompatibility between the IT systems really caused a significant sort of strain on young students and their families, because they couldn't get their certificate. They couldn't go for work. And I think this is where we must understand that we must get the right systems in place before we assume another responsibility. We have to assess the impact on the system. So I just wanted to make that point. Then thirdly, I am concerned about two issues, and that is the private colleges and what is clear that they are in arrears as far as certification money is concerned. Because obviously Umalusi performs a duty for the public colleges, but private colleges must pay. Now, again, if we look at the issue that the national department is responsible to ensure that students who enroll for any college diploma is issued and in fact achieves the set standard should have a certificate. Now here it is the colleges that are in arrears. Could I ask Umalusi, can we have an understanding of what the quantum of the arrears is? And secondly, ask the department if they can tell us what mechanisms or measures can they follow. What should we do? Should we deregister these colleges? Should we bring on board a specific regulation that in order to qualify for to perform for the next year, you must first issue certificates of the previous year? We must bring in some or other measure. Because from what we see here, there was progress from public colleges, but from private colleges not. And people, the public, sometimes go to private colleges thinking that they would have a better opportunity to qualify. So what are we doing about that? We must intervene there. And then I'm very happy that the colleges also now accept greater responsibility, that we have a role for the principal. I just believe, and I don't know if it may be part of what is being introduced here, as intervention, systemic improvement, etc., maybe it falls within that. But at what stage, because at some case, in some cases we've understood that students, notwithstanding the fact that they did not qualify to write the exam, were just allowed to write the exam. Now, in their minds, they still believe there's a chance that they will qualify and get the certificate. But in the end, it is the department that must tell them, you didn't make the grade, you did not qualify, either because of the 80% rule, or whatever. But what are we going to do? Can we compel colleges to not allow them to write so that we don't conflate the problem and then have advance notice? X number of students wrote, be it a part or a full sort of exam, so that the system can provide the necessary checks and balances to see that we keep abreast of where the certificates are lying and where the data is still outstanding. Thank you, Jesus.
Member? Honourable Mkalibe?
Thank you very much and thanks for the presentation. My question will be that the department made a commitment in the strategic plan to release the certification to students within 3 months of the publication of results. Now, with the lessons that learned from the eradication of backlog, is the department, Malus and CETA, confident that with this system they are moving closer to meeting this target? And whether the target will be achieved for the August 2017 examination for the NATED engineering second trimester and the business studies second semester. Again, with the undertaking made to clear this outstanding backlog by the end of July 2017, whether this will be achieved, are you confident about that? How far are you?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, my question relates to page 3. Most of the challenges that you calculate are the exact and the same challenges that brought us here. In fact, that made us to tighten the certification program as a priority in the portfolio committee. And it looks like you still have a merry-go-round on some of the problems, which means we are now on the second year of this portfolio committee reporting. And it doesn't look like you have an end on sight. Maybe for us, it would be unfair to go on a third year with some of these issues remaining as challenges. It would be better maybe if we can get an insight on, do you have measures to maybe tabulate a plan out of this? For instance, quality of data received from colleges. This is exactly what created the problem, and this is ongoing, and it looks like it's not ending. And while I would like to appreciate the number of certificates released thus far, I think you have a problem in some colleges, in particular the rural colleges, which maybe they may not be able to raise the flag high enough for their problems at the time when you are solving these problems, and then maybe they creep in a little bit later and then they receive a service or they receive the right to address a little bit later. There are colleges in KZN that still indicate that some of the NATED ones, in particular NATED certificates, are
still outstanding, and they've been outstanding for more than 3 years. If you dispute this, I'll give you the names of the colleges. But I just want to have a sense of, have you maybe diligently focused your attention between the spread of rural and urban? Because I know some colleges will complain later, and as such, the problem would look like it is new, whereas it has been done or it has been dealt with the urban vote a little bit quicker, because the complaining there happened on instance, because people have more energy and have more awareness on their rights, and they seem to seek resolution on these rights as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
May I thank the department and say everybody for the presentation. And thank you once more for the collaborative work, because to us it is saying that this challenge, which the one of certificates will be eradicated, and it is better when we work together, because you know you don't have to go there, you know, to find the explanation from the other body. I just thank you for that collaborative work that you have done, and it is easier for us to see how far have we gone. I think it is a common thing that we will always be looking at the challenges that you experience, that you have experienced as in this issue of certificates. For me, the burning one is that of the quality of data that you receive from colleges, where you highlight gaps and errors. We know that it may be the issue of the pending results, but the people mostly at fault is colleges themselves, the lecturers. Since colleges have migrated to your department, I think that you must have your disciplinary measures to say if someone hasn't submitted, or there is a gap, or there is this without an explanation, this is what will happen. Because it might not be the same working, maybe they were working in a different manner like you are doing. So I think that you need to have your own way, your own style of working, so that they take the issue of resulting seriously. Yes. Some consequence management, you know, something that is standardized, so that they know that if you don't submit this, because this also has got an impact on certificate, for example. If marks are not there from colleges, then certificates cannot be issued. And then learners or students will always be complaining of not receiving certificates, whilst the department cannot issue certificates without marks. So we need to understand that lecturers themselves need to be responsible and understand what will happen if they don't the seriousness if they don't submit marks. I'm pleased to see that the numbers have dropped so much, and we are below 1,000 in terms of certificates that are still outstanding. But my concern will be on how do we then track or monitor that students speak the same language, because when we go for oversight, we will always have a different story. There will always be an item, or even if SRC are making a presentation, they will always say that we don't receive our certificates. For me, what I would like to see is a report that will be, you know, speaking along the same lines as you have done today, that they themselves, they have received their certificates. I'm not sure whether we do need to get a report from these 50 TVET colleges in order to understand what is happening in individual colleges in terms of the certificates that they have received. Because if you are saying that you are below 1,000, and that must, this, that is
what should be reflected, that should be what is reflected in quality. That is the same response that we must, I think that we need to liaise with colleges as well so that we get a sense of what is actually happening. Lastly, Chair, Comrade, Honorable Killian has spoken on the issue of non-payment of fees owed to Manusi by private colleges. I would like to get a sense of how much is being owed by these private colleges and what effect does this have on you as an institution? Thank you, Chair.
Can I go with your permission, Chair? We, as you can see, are very grateful that this problem is coming to an end. But we also think we must spend time with you discussing it further, because we don't want you to say at the end of June we are at 0 point, we have solved, we have issued all the certificates that were reflected in our backlog. And thereafter, we think the problem is sorted, only to find after 1 and 2 years, especially when we do oversight, that actually another backlog has built up, because we haven't eradicated the cause of the first backlog. So that is why we're spending time to just satisfy ourselves that we're not going to come back to this problem again. Look, I mean, in our society, certificates, Baba, they are such a big thing. I mean, when I passed at 6, you should have seen my grandmother. I was treated like a king in the family. I wasn't said all these petty things going by, but she was sending other people rather than me. So it is such a big honor. I mean, without the social implication of that, that you take in, it is opening a door for me to go out of poverty, to move from working class in the family to middle class. You know those opportunities. Without those implications, I don't think my grandmother, she just respected education and achievement. And in December, all around you, your uncles will be asking you, have you passed standard 6? What class did you get? Even those that themselves did not go to school, but they will come chasing you up, you know, wanting to know whether you've passed. So it is a big thing in our society. And when somebody has gone to school and he can't produce, they think there's something wrong. He hasn't been actually attending. How come he doesn't? Because in the past, it was very difficult to pass, but once you had passed, you'd get the certificate. And they were using manual methods. There was no technology. I mean, I'm talking 60s, 70s. There was no technology then. They were doing it manually. So the big question is now, in matric, we do school visits in our parliamentary constituency at the beginning of the year. The one thing at high school, basic education, that you've never come across is them complaining about certificate. Now the question is, how come in Gipu, for example, where I come from, we've got 7 high schools, including 1 private high school run by the Roman Catholic Church. It is Holy Cross, it was in Alexander, later moved to Gipu. Now, out of all those 7 high schools, we've never encountered this problem of certificate. I'm just saying, if the problem is numbers, how come in basic education they can cope with those numbers and produce certificate according to the set time? What was our problem here? And are we sure after finishing this backlog, things will run according to the set standard? If it is 3 months, every 3 months we'll have them. We won't again encounter this thing of a backlog. Thanks, Chair. thank you, Chairperson. Well, we appreciate the progress that has been made thus far, and we believe that with the new deadline set, the backlog will be completely cleared. The question that I want to ask, I want to hear the department's views. Part of the problem, I heard from one presentation, not here today, that an honorable Killian will talk to it. Part of the problem of the poor quality of data is a situation where students is not qualified for the examination. To write exams were allowed to sit for supplementary examination. And what I would like to know, why would a learner who did not qualify in the first place be allowed by colleges to sit for supplementary examination? So I just want to hear the department's comment on that. And lastly, Chair, the bulk of the outstanding certificates are as a result of private colleges and so on. And, but the department has the responsibility to ensure that certificates are issued. What steps is the department taking to ensure that private colleges provide student marks so that outstanding certificates can be issued? Is there anything that the department can do to force these people to release the certificate or not? Thank you.
We ask that you respond to those questions. Let me just add one or two. Also in appreciating, I think especially the effort in bringing the three of you together so that there's one understanding of what it is that we need to do to make sure that we stay on course in providing these certificates. So I agree that we welcome that, especially. Two things. The first one is, I think we should learn some lessons from the NASPIS situation insofar as the colleges are concerned, some universities are concerned. And that is that maybe we should, in your cycle that you have put here to us, and the fact that you are now making sure that the colleges take responsibility, we think you must devolve some more things, and that is strengthen things much more at the college level. Because as long as the colleges feel that it's not us, not quite us, maybe we should, look, we don't report, the department gets blamed. As long as you have that situation, the full commitment is not going to come through. And so we think what we need to, what we need in what you have presented here is something that is a little bit more stronger on ensuring that that fourth leg becomes stronger in the entire equation. Also. And so, DG, if there are any capacitation over and above that you have done required at that level, then we think it will be far better, because all of you are complaining about the qualitative nature, the fact that you've got to screen. You know, why do you have to do all of that? Why do you have to screen? Why do you have to do extra additional people and all of that? Isn't it supposed to be part of my job? Isn't it supposed to be part of my responsibility? So I think we must turn it around instead of having additional. That's money that is going to unnecessary things, and I know it's supposed to be part of me. So I think in the presentation that you've given, I want to suggest that we should strengthen that and learn from NASPIS that part in the chain is where they, you know, not us, they don't feel sufficient responsibility. And I agree with those members that said that DG, so if it's part of my responsibility, it means that if I do not take the responsibility, there has to be consequences of the fact that I haven't taken the responsibility. So if we can, and lastly I want to say, I think it would be good to attach the date also to that. You bring the college and so responsibility in the equation, the dates that you've given here, I don't quite see them in there. Because if they know that they've got to hand out something at a particular time, in order for you to make sure that you do this correctly every 3 months, you are relying on somebody. Now, if that somebody is not given a date, then there's a problem. So that's also missing here. And I think it will be just a nice exercise, if it's possible, to track the recipients, to continuously get feedback from the recipients also. You know, DG, when people, the work is correct. I remember when my son-in-law got the certificate, he was running wild, because I had to combine a frame. And so it hangs proudly there in the house with nothing else on. It's like a big moment. And so maybe as much as students get very excited when they graduate, it's the same thing. I mean, there's got to be a fuss that is made. Certificate day is what. And if you bring those pressures onto the colleges, it will be equal to the way it's been done at the university students' graduation days also. So, DG, back to you. You will guide us on how the questions will be done or answered.
No, thank you very much. Firstly, I think we concur fully with the honorable member in respect to the importance of this subject matter. Socially as well as economically in society. The second piece is that the scope of examination in the teaching college sector is a bit different from the normal schooling system. We are talking here about 7 examination cycles in a year and over 900 subjects in 1 year. And if I'm correct, I think DBE, they are running about examinations of around 58 subjects, you know, a year at once per annum. So the scope and the dynamics are a little bit different. Now the third issue then turns on the issues that you are raising sharply. The question of the accountability in the value chain of examination at college level is the area we're putting much emphasis and deploying huge resources at, including the employment of subject specialists that will be assisting in this regard. That process is currently unfolding in the department at the present moment. And the processes that then we have put in place into ensuring that there is accountability at college level and ensuring that the efficiency and effectiveness is built right at that level with the emphasis on the consequence management as well, as honorable members are actually articulated. We are agreeing with you quite fully in respect to that area. The rural-urban divide is not really a matter in respect to our services. We spend more time and much more resources and focus in the main in TVET colleges in rural areas. For instance, I think Tatana was in there twice, rural SEC, but there may be a college in the FM center that were willing to visit with a view of giving that support and focused attention. I'm just illustrating it as a way of an example, including the deployment of resources. So the determination that also led to putting that college under administration, it was as a result of us picking up those anomalies and deficiencies in the system. And until it got out of that situation, and the processes then of staffing and management as well as lecturer level were actually rolled out. That's why it's coming quite better now. Yes, there may be some challenges here and there, but all these colleges are receiving our adequate attention according to the need at all times. But then I'll give my colleagues in the department, Umarus and Sita, to come in respect to some other technical issues that are at hand at the present moment. Nadine?
Thank you, DT. Chair, honourable members, in terms of the deterioration of the data, we have a standard operating procedure of the quality of the data and its format that should be programmed at the college institutional level on their IT system. And in November exams, we found that a large volume of the data submitted to the department on the side of the college had been inaccurately captured or had been converted by the system to present different data to us. And that is why we now have the sign-off in place. That sign-off was put in effect with immediate effect for the first exam cycle in 2017. So no results will be released in 2017 unless your college principal has signed off that everything is accurate and that it's there. So that is already in force since the supplementary exam for the NCE qualification. In terms of the graduates, the N4 graduates that continue to the end of COVID, I don't have those statistics available. We'll have to do an analysis of that for the committee and give a report to the committee on that, Chair. In terms of those candidates who continue to do a diploma, do they know they can, do they know they qualify, we will, as part of the initiative to train the college officials about the national end diploma processing, also be engaging with student support services at colleges about the national end diploma in place and your subject choice already when you enter N4. So it will be part of the whole initiative. Also from the student's perspective, what subjects should you be choosing, what workplace will you need to go to, etc. So they already, right at the start, know what the requirements are for a diploma. In terms of the new college, the colleges being added, are we being proactive for new qualifications like the NASTA? Yes, the new IT system is taking all qualifications and expansion into additional qualifications into account. So we've covered all sectors, the TV sector and the CET sector in terms of that. In terms of the system processing, the system doesn't look at are you a rural college or an urban college. It processes the certificates that are available in the data as it becomes available. So there's no distinction between where you are sitting in a college. The system will process the data that it is able to process at that moment in time. In terms of the turnaround time frame, the 3 months, yes, we are very confident. With the supplementary exam, we're confident that it will be met. We've changed our internal processes at the department to ensure that we meet those time frames. As you indicated, Chair, in certain instances, making the colleges more accountable for certain processes, also to speed up the process to make sure that we do meet that 3 month turnaround time frame. And so that's why we're committing that the NCE supplementary certificates will be released by the 26th of July, which is 3 months after the release of the results. And in terms of the candidates who are allowed to write that don't meet the requirements, a lot of college principals do write and say they're going to have a problem because the candidates are then going to strike and disrupt exams, and we've indicated they should manage that, but this is part of the accountability program that DG has spoken to. We've started the process, and certainly will gain momentum and expand into these other areas, as you yourself, Chair, and the honourable members have suggested. are on the cards. We're just phasing them in across the colleges. And in terms of the reports from the 50 public feedback colleges to determine the outstanding results, we have engaged on a query to all 50 public colleges to give us a full list. They do receive lists from us, control lists of certificates that have been issued. They input back onto their systems, and we will be doing a full audit, asking them, each of the public colleges, as with the college that you wrote to yourself, Honourable Member, Chair, to ensure that it's not only that college, but that all colleges, we indeed have a proper picture. And when we have that information in hand, we will be able to determine from those ID numbers what is the problem with that certificate. Is it indeed that it's a data problem, or did the candidate not meet the requirements? Because we find that often candidates are asking for certificates, but they haven't met the requirements. Because in the TVET sector, you have to have finished a qualification on the lower level, the full qualification, in all of the subjects, and receive the certificate for that before you can get the certificate on the higher level. And often students, for example, our NCD candidates, are sometimes missing a subject on level 2, but they're wanting their level 4 certificate. So there are some of those instances as well that we are aware of, that we do then refer back to the college to advise the students to deal with that. The colleges are required to keep a logging tracking mechanism in place to ensure that when we release certificates, the candidates sign off and they can see that who has received the certificate. But we will certainly in our audit also check that that is indeed happening, because at the moment our IT system does not capture the details in exams about where the candidate is, how to contact them. The new system, we will be able to follow up with the student directly. So that's a shortcoming on the current system, so we wouldn't actually able to track each and every individual candidate to that extent. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, DG, honourable members. The meeting that we hold between the department, Umalusi and CEDA, every Monday at 7:30, are working like a miracle, because we are able to give priority attention to all the problems that arise, so that at the beginning of the week already there are marching orders to say we have observed these challenges and they have to be attended to during the course of the week. And the following Monday, people are able to report on the progress that they've made and also the new problems that have arisen. In that way, I'm confident that with those regular meetings, we are going to be able to eradicate whatever future problems may be lying ahead of us. The commitment that we have, Chairperson, is that no student who has written exemplars should be without a student. And I want to agree with the honourable members that you know, the impact that the non-availability of students has on individuals is something that we cannot finish discussing in this room, because it affects people differently from one community or from one individual to the other. I need to indicate that the new approach of the department is that at the point of resulting, you must have 100% data. It's very helpful, because that solves the problem that would come 3 months down the line at the point of certification. At the point of resulting, 100% information, and holding the educators, the lecturers, and the principals of TVET colleges accountable for those data is very important to everybody in the system, so that whoever has written the examination and has been resulted is guaranteed his certificate at the end of the day. Having said that, the challenge remains with the private TVET colleges. Private colleges, we've got a lot of private colleges blocked. And when the question arises about the quantum of the problem, the figure that I have is 2.3 million. To give the exact figure, 2,360,797.36. And when you look at the emergency budget, the certification budget is 10 million. This says to me, this is 20% of our budget. And this budget has been approved by the minister, it has been tabled in parliament. And if this colleague don't honor their commitment, then it means we are 2.5 million short. This is the number the figures may change. This is a moving target. If we don't contain this problem, we might be sitting with an even bigger problem at the next time we check. So it is very important that the private colleges are compelled to pay. Very important. Thank you very much, Chef.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. I think that maybe from our perspective, one of the most important factors that we picked up in terms of success was in terms of collaboration, not just at a management level, but actually at an operational level. In this regard, in terms of the project team members, they actually worked well together, and they actually started gelling well in terms of knowing exactly what is expected. And when we do raise queries, you know, then it gets addressed at a more speedily manner than what we've actually experienced before. We also picked up that from a technical perspective, that the type of errors and the number of errors was then starting to reduce. And with that collaboration effort, we were actually able to resolve issues together. Right? So instead of one particular organization working on their own. So for me, collaboration was actually a huge success. An issue that we also picked up, and I know that this was mentioned before, was in terms of we are dealing with a legacy application. So the knowledge of the application was limited only to a few key staff members. In a bid to actually move that knowledge to other staff members as well, what we started then introducing was what we call standard operating procedures. So if we do standardization, if we do resulting, what are the key processes that needs to follow? And the standard operating procedure, as was indicated earlier on now in terms of the presentation, that is also now going to start cutting across the three different organizations. So that's also then key in terms of future success. The solution also explained in terms of providing students with a platform to log matters, so that they can actually have a voice. Yes, number one is the tracking, but that will then also provide us with a repository of all the issues that's being experienced. So on top of that, we will be able to get out reports, we'll be able to identify which are the problem areas, and then we will be able to put in corrective action from that perspective. So that's from our perspective. The system is currently in test mode, and the decision to go live will then be between the department and either to say at what stage do we take it live. Thank you.
DC, I think there was one issue about the private colleges that there was yourself.
I think the question of the private colleges is in respect to the arrears that they owe to Umadus, which result in the not being certificated in, on the basis of the amount that they are owed. And I think it's a matter that...
The question is, what is the department doing about it? I think the member had a number of suggestions that Honourable Killian made in that regard, which was to the department, but the quantum was answered.
These are the issues that are getting attention in the task team that we have established as to how we could be addressing it in terms of the regulation. But there are punitive measures that the private TVET colleges would actually suffer in terms of accountability. But we're also mindful that people who are there are citizens of the country. And we take quite a number of factors into consideration in addressing this matter, whilst we are ensuring that we enforce compliance with them in terms of payment. But those discussions are actually taking place. We have been arrived at a determination exactly what we should actually be doing, but we are engaging them. So it will culminate into some severe penalties, I guess, if they no adequate response from them. But one of the fears is to speak on the matter.
What about the chair?
No, I think that I think that DGD, we've heard what the manager has said. A clear one to yourself was as the department takes responsibility of colleges, do you register or deregister them? I think that was the aspect that was asked. And we hear what you are saying, but I think our view is there's a little bit much more. It's not a little bit of money that is outstanding. The one that suffers are the students. And this is our concern. Why should the students suffer because of that? We don't understand what the reason is that these monies are outstanding. We didn't hear that part. Why can't they? Don't they have money? Or what's the problem? If they are in areas. If you can answer that part to us, then it will help.
My point is, maybe let's put it bluntly. Do you have authority over private colleges if they default, or if they infringe on their customers? Because producing a certificate is far beyond customer service. It makes the payer, which is the student or the parent, not able to know if there is anything that they could do for the private college. What is there for you as an authority to assist the process? Because you register them, you qualify them to trade.
Kilian, the last one, that Honourable Buck, I want to encourage you. You said earlier on that there were some colleges or something where you said there is a problem. I want to encourage you to provide that information to the department on where the problem is, Honourable Kilian.
All I wanted to say to the DG, through you, Chairperson, is we must remember, colleges determine the fees that students and the parents pay on the basis of their commitments also to Umalusi to issue the certificate or to, you know, in the process. If the colleges fail to honour that commitment to Umalusi, it means that they want to pocket more profit. That's essentially what it is, at the expense of those students. And the department has a responsibility. It cannot shy away from the responsibility. So what we actually wanted to know is, by law, through the regulations or whatever, what mechanisms are there in place, or should we make legislative amendments to give you that authority? To give them a time to in fact conform, comply, failing which they will face deregistration in the next year. And secondly, I want to make a firm proposal to Umalusi Chairperson, and I hope that the committee would support me, and that is that Umalusi must not risk this process. It's your budget that will not be met. I would like to suggest that they start taking legal action. That if they do that, and they say failing to pay with by that date, we will have to institute legal action against you, you may at least get some money back in. But we must tackle this problem on two fronts. One, with what is available in the department, in the legislation, and secondly, also through directly getting the money that is owed to you, because in the end, again, families and students suffer.
Yeah, Chair, very briefly, I also think that private institutions are running, we do accept that they are still in there, but trouble is those that own, there's somebody to make it private, there's somebody owning. And those that own run it like a business. And if they don't pay, if they don't fulfill, then business standards should apply. If I owe a bank and I don't pay, the law takes its course. The bank will employ its legal department, they'll send me the first notice,
after the second notice, depending on the loan, if it is a loan, can take my house. So there, unless you treat them like a business, you're going to be in big trouble. Because in business, if I can have, if people can run away from their debt, they'll do so. So credit control is very important. If people are owing, then they must be forced to pay. Otherwise, you'll never get it right, because it is a business. As far as the owners are concerned, if they can maximize profit and take more into their pocket, then willingly do so. So they must be forced to pay. I don't know if you subsidize. Maybe the first thing would be to stop subsidy. But ultimately, it must be legally enforceable, because it is a business. And once the culture is there and they know that is going to be the case, you'll see they'll start taking you serious. Otherwise, if they know they can get away with it, it will be part of money making. They'll do so very easily.
So I think there's just this one matter on the private colleges. The view of the committee is we're giving you an opportunity to deal with this matter and to deal with it more firmly than what is the case at the moment. I think what we should add is on the members, there's nothing wrong for the committee if we see this path does not bring any success. There's nothing wrong for us to ask those colleges to come here. However many there are, we fill them up here in this entire room and ask them to explain to us what the difficulty is. But the first port of call is it's your responsibility for you do that. And to be giving you that opportunity to do that. So, Umalusi and DG.
Chairperson, we have considered a number of options, Umalusi. And let's assume that we write off the debt. We lose our budget and not be able to account to the portfolio committee on why we have not met our budget targets. But even if we were to do that, and I think it's impossible, second of the matter is that if we were to lease those certificates to the colleges, they would in turn not give them to the students, because maybe the students are still owing them. But also, it could be that they want to pocket even more money because they are in business. You know, they want to make more profit. We have explored with a number of legal firms the option of debt collection. And the advice that we are getting is consistent from one legal firm to the other. That of the people that owe us, once they realize that they're taking legal action, 20% will pay immediately. Immediately. You know, they'll comply immediately. And that is the trend that they've observed over the years. And then 60% will pay later, but 20% will never pay. So we are sitting with that challenge. And also that once we take this route, we're going to have to pay legal fees, one way or the other. Whether we charge them on the colleges themselves, or whether we must pay is a loss. So we have to develop strategies to deal with this matter as soon as possible. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. If I may just say, add on, this question of the private colleges, we don't relate to it as an aftermath matter. There are a whole range of processes in respect to their registrability or not, whether they are operating legally or illegally. One of the things that confront us is fly-by-night, one challenge. Then the second area is colleges that we shut down for non-compliance in respect to this matter. For instance, by end of 2016, we have closed down about 95 private colleges. Then the third area is the tightening of regulations, of which we are doing on a continuous basis. The fourth area, criminal charges, you know, against them. Now, the mop up that we're trying to do in respect to this, which perhaps is a bit trickier, if the college has closed down
handle that situation. These are the matters that we are discussing at an operational level. But others, in terms of the rules, regulations, as well as legislation, we are clear about. And some of them who have opened criminal cases, you know, against them. They are all there, but there are these then intricacies that we are pursuing dealing with, including the outstanding money, while exploring everything, as the CEO of Commandos is indicating. But the question of closing them down when they are not complying on all these matters, we are doing. It would just be the question of how far are we progressing in trying to eliminate these illegal operations, including those that affect the question of the certification by the private colleges. Because the contractual arrangement at the point of registering to study is between a college and a student. And we're not there, you know, as a department. We normally get these things after this actually happened, then we follow them. According to the rules of the game. Thanks.
Now, thank you very much for the presentation. I think you would agree, Honourable Members, that with regards to the last discussion, which is the one on the private colleges, if the members agree, we should ask all of you to send us a progress report in August when we're back here in Parliament on this matter. And provide us with the full details of what the significant problem is, the quantum of it, the details, the reasons, all of that, and the steps that have been taken, not going to be taken, have been taken to bring the situation to normality. With that, we thank all of you for the presentation on the update. On the certificates of backlog, we, Honourable Members, are going to deal with the next matter, which is the Department's quarterly report. Is this a problem?
I was just saying, before we start with that, may we have a 5-minute break just to stretch our legs and then the other...
I think the many legs are up already. Thank you, honourable members. Thank you for the break. DG, we are in your hands to take us through the report.
thank you very much, Chair. For affording us this opportunity to present once again as a department our performance against the annual performance plan for the financial year that ended in March 2017, which in the main would be focused on the overall achievement of the department in respect to the targets that we set for ourselves and break it down the program of which assists at the present moment. But it's also important to take into consideration that we are making this presentation whilst at the same time we are in the process of preparing for an annual report for the financial year 2016-17. In all those processes with AG and also in our internal work as a department. So I would like at this stage to request Ms. Ndiba to take us through the prepared presentation for the last quarter of 2016 financial year. Over to you,
Dean. Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. The presentation outline will cover the background, performance and predetermined objectives of the program, starting with Program 3, University Education, Program 4, TVET, 6, up to the last program, which is Program 1. Administration, and then lastly cover also the financial information. Chair, in terms of the APP for the financial year that ended in March 2017, the department had 70 targets to achieve, and in terms of us providing progress on the, in terms of the quarterly reports that we've been tabling to the committee, we've been indicating that we're making steady progress towards the attainment of the 70 targets. And now this is the last quarterly report for that financial year, and it's meant to provide progress on targets that we do for completion, specifically during the quarter under review. But it also provides status on targets that were not achieved as at the end of the financial year. Now, in terms of the summary of performance, for the quarter under review, there were 47 targets due for completion, and 79 of those, which is 37, have been achieved. But we will also provide progress on the 10 targets that were not achieved at the time of reporting. In terms of Program 3, Honorable Members, this is the program that had 19 targets during the quarter under review, and 13 of those were achieved, covering steering mechanism development, integrated planning, implementation monitoring. Now, in terms of steering mechanisms, there were three targets that we achieved there. One is governance indicators for universities, which provides the department with a basis for monitoring governance within the universities, but also we publish a policy on minimum requirements for programs leading to qualifications in higher education for early childhood educators. This is the policy that seeks to ensure the professionalization of teaching in the South African context. Also, within the time frame covered in the quarter, there was a ministerial statement which was approved by the minister for the utilization of the university grant, university development grant, which seeks to promote success and transformation within universities. Its focus being to
being on student success, staff development, as well as program development. In terms of integrated planning, an integrated plan for offering NQF level 5 qualifications in the PISA system was approved. There were about 10 oversight reports that were due at the end of March 2017. 9 of those have been achieved, covering the effective use of infrastructure development grants, the use of the new university earmarked grant, the implementation of the ministerial development targets, as well as the report on the council capacity development program. These are the reports that can be provided to the committee if needs be, but these are the reports that seek to provide the status quo in terms of the utilization of various grants that the department provides to these universities and whether they effective use of those or not. But as indicated, we will provide, if required, these reports to the committee. So I think focus should be on those targets that were not achieved by Program 3, and I would like to provide progress on those. There are about 6 targets. 1, the policy on creative and innovation output. This policy was delayed due to the fact that we needed to take into consideration input from the CHE before we could finalize the policy. But I'm glad to indicate that the policy has since been published in the Government Gazette for implementation and no further action is required in terms of it going forward. In terms of the report on the 2015 research output of universities, the report has since been published. There was just a delay in terms of publishing it on the website by 31 March. And I think it was an error on the part of the program manager responsible for this report. But it has now been published in the website. In terms of the policy on internationalization of higher education, we have a draft policy for public comment. However, the program has identified that there was a weakness in terms of project managing the development of these policies. Now, we have sought now to put a project management plan to ensure that this policy gets finalized by end of March 2018. Policy on community service for graduates. This policy has not been developed. As in the SAGE, the task team report has actually indicated that the implementation of the policy will have major financial implications, and therefore there is a need to engage further on this policy and maybe explore other alternative approaches in as far as other schemes that are available to ensure that we have graduates that serve the community after they have graduated. So chances are that we as of now we may not proceed with this policy until there is enough exploration in as far as considering other schemes and maybe also the finances required or the funding required to implement this policy. In terms of the policy on differentiation in higher education, I think I've dealt with this one. The revised funding framework for higher education institutions, the framework was not published in the Government Gazette as planned by 31 December 2016. The framework will be published this year, this financial year, December 2017, after consultation with the sector and in line with any amendment that may be necessary due to the recommendations of the Fees Commission report. Lastly, the revised language policy for higher education. The policy also was not published as originally planned. The intention is to finalize these revisions to the language policy by end of the financial year 2017-18. In terms of program 4, Chair, the program had 11 targets for the financial year ended March 2017. 8 of those were due for completion during the fourth quarter, and 5, which is 3% of the 8, were achieved, also covering steering mechanisms, development, implementation, monitoring, teaching and learning support initiatives. And in terms of steering mechanisms approved, we have now a revised costing model for TVET college programs. Also, there are about 4 monitoring reports that were approved by the DG, covering governance issues within TVET colleges, teaching and learning support, student support services, as well as the maintenance of TVET colleges infrastructure. In terms of targets that were not achieved, as indicated, the National Admission and Promotion Guidelines for NCBs. This is not a departmental competence. It forms part of the qualification policy, which is the responsibility of the Quality Council. And therefore, the revised policy has now been published on the 26th May 2017. Which also covers the admission and promotion guidelines in it. Now, in terms of the revised conduct policy for NCB, this can only be done once the policy is finalized by the Quality Council. Therefore, the conduct policy for NCB will then be taken through a process to be revised. The establishment of the coordinating structure for stakeholder engagement, which is SAFESET, could not be finalized as envisaged by end of the financial year. However, DG has approved the appointment of the Fund and Human Resource Management Service Provider on the 19th of February 2017. It is envisaged that this will be initially established as a unit within the department, with initial outputs being the review of the curriculum within the TVET sector. This is also one program that had to report on the performance of the system, particularly the TVET colleges. TVET colleges are contributing to the implementation of sub-outcome 2 of outcome 5, which is to increase access and success in programs leading to intermediate and high-level learning. Unfortunately, at the time of reporting, data was not readily available to report on a number of outcome indicators, including certification rates in qualifications N3 and N6, the throughput rate, as well as the students obtaining qualifications within the stipulated time, those that are funded by NASAS. We will also be reflecting on this in the annual report. The other areas in terms of system performance which we can report on includes headcount enrollment in TVET colleges. We have an unverified figure of 741,542. We envisage to finalize the validation process by October this year to confirm whether the 741,542 is the actual number or not. But in terms of the certification rate in NCV level 4, We had a target of 40%, but the system could only perform at 32.6%. And we also heard about the lead time to issue certificates to qualifying graduates, that it takes more than 3 months to issue certificates. Additional beds, in terms of student accommodation in public TVET colleges, we had planned to add 8,000 linked to the new college campuses that are being built, but due to inadequate funding, we have nothing to report on this, as there hasn't been any progress. Also, in terms of the students entering the foundation program, we had a target of 5,000. There is nothing to report in terms of progress on that. However, the work in terms of the development of the program itself is underway. We also have a provisional figure in terms of the qualified TVET students that obtained financial assistance. The target was 200,000. The provisional figure that we received from NASFAS is 226,007. We will then confirm this once the audit process is finalized by NASFAS. In terms of CET program, there were seven targets that were due for completion in the fourth quarter. Five of those have been achieved, one being the conduct policy for general education and training certificate for adults, which Minister approved for public comment. But also there is the annual plan in terms of education and training, which was approved by the Director General for CET colleges. Also a report on the maintenance of CET sites or facilities, as well as a strategy on strategic partnerships. In terms of the status of targets not achieved for Program 6, there is just one target which was in quota 3, regulations for the establishment of the satellite CLC, which was supposed to have been approved by 31 December 2016. However, the branch could not proceed with these regulations after receiving advice from our legal services that in terms of the CET Act, actually only councils can establish CLCs. And therefore, the minister is limited to the establishment of the colleges. Now, instead of the branch producing these regulations, a new policy and procedures for regulating the opening, merging, and closing of CET learning sites was developed and approved by the minister, albeit after the end of the financial year, on the 5th of April 2017. Similarly, in terms of system performance, the data on the performance of the CET colleges is not available to report on. We envisage to report on this by October, once the information is received from CETA and validated. And that would cover headcount enrollment in TVET colleges as well as certification rates. Program 5, which is skills development, the program had 5 targets due for completion in the fourth quarter, and all the 5 targets were achieved as planned, and that cover the approved national skills development strategy 3, which was extended or has been extended to March 2020, as well as the licensing of CETAS, whose lifespan has now been extended to March 2020. The average lead time in terms of trade testing, there is an improvement there. The current average lead time is 120 days, which is an improvement from the 169 days, which was registered in 2015. Also, in terms of the pass rate, there is an improvement from 2015-16 of 1%, which is 55% in this current financial year. Also, during the quarter under review, there was supposed to be a report on the performance of CTAS in terms of the implementation of skills development strategy that has been produced and approved by the DG. Other related targets that are systemic relate to the national artisan learners that are employed or self-employed. We had a target of 67% there. Actually, it's 79%. The proportion of CTAS meeting standards of good governance. We had plans to have all CTAS meeting good standards of standards of good governance, but unfortunately, only 71% meet those. In terms of learners that received web-based learning opportunities, we are already surpassing the 5-year target of 140,000. We are now at 148,517 against the target of 120,000 for the year. Artisans qualified per annum. Also, there's an achievement there. The target was 21,110. Actual performance is 21,188. Artisans registered 30,750. And actual performance is 30,814. Now I'll be The slide from slide 30 will be covering all the transversal programs, beginning with program 2, which is planning, policy and strategy. This program had 9 targets due for completion in the quarter under review, and all of those were achieved. Also covering theory mechanism development for research, system monitoring, teaching and learning support initiatives, as well as the provision of PSET statistical data. Now, in terms of steering mechanisms, Minister approved a national policy on career development services across all spheres of government, a policy for open learning and distance education, and these were the only two steering mechanisms that were due in the quarter under review, and they were approved, they were achieved as planned. In terms of system monitoring, there are various reports covering international relations, trends in terms of macro indicators within the PISA system, the implementation of open learning and distance education strategy thereof, but also a report on skill supply and demand, which is a resource meant to assist in terms of planning for program offerings, but also in terms of occupations, as well as a report on the statistics within the PSET system. Lastly, teaching and learning support initiatives. During the quarter under review, there was a development of materials for the two identified programs we piloted in this financial year, namely the National Occupational Certificate, Electrician, as well as the diagnostic tool for TVET colleges. Program 1 had one target to achieve for the quarter under review, but in terms of this report, we also are providing status in terms of performance on the other annual targets which will be reported in the annual report. The target which was due was an ICT procurement plan for the 2017-18 financial year. In relation to the other annual targets, we had planned to fill 90% of funded vacancies positions during the course of this financial year. And performance is at 92.3%. In terms of resolving disciplinary cases, the plan was to resolve all disciplinary cases reported, but unfortunately we could only, on average, resolve 22.2% of those. In terms of filling of advertised posts within 180 days, we also are not doing well because it currently takes 186 days to fill a vacancy. There's that deviation of about 6 days. But in terms of paying invoices received from creditors, we are meeting the standards there as set by DPSA. It currently takes 29 days on average to pay invoices received. Those targets that could not be achieved, I think in terms of the mitigating measures, program one is planning to, in terms of filling advertised positions within 180 days, to utilize the public service regulations which make provision to fill generic positions through the utilization of a database for previously advertised posts. Mainly because most the backlog is actually sitting at post level, all posts that are below level 8. And because there's a provision that we can use a database to fill these generic positions, we think it's going to assist GLE in terms of reducing the number of days it takes to fill this. Now, in terms of resolving disciplinary cases, I think previously we also indicated that there are capacity problems that are actually impacting on the time it takes for the department to resolve these cases. Now, in terms of mitigating this, the capacity has now been increased through the appointment of a deputy director at head office, but also 4 assistant directors that will be based in regional offices. I think this is the last slide in terms of the performance per program. I will now, through you, Chair, hand over to take us through the financial information.
Thank you, Ryan. Honourable Chairperson, and honourable members. In terms of the financial information, let's start by indicating that for 2016-17 at the end of the fourth quarter, 31 March, the overall spending of the department was at 99.9%, which is quite substantial and even an improvement on the previous financial year. Average spending for normal operational activities, if we include compensation, was 99.4%. Compensation of employees also stood at 99.4% in terms of our personnel, normal personnel expenditure, and fully spent in terms of examiners and moderators. There's still a limitation on the operational funds that we have as a department, and that specifically also includes examiners and moderators, and we had to apply a number of vitamins across programs to ensure that we do not overspend, and specifically not to have any unauthorized expenditure, which would mean that we overspend either a program or the vote as a whole. We also applied various vitamins within the approved treasury framework as it was required. On slide 38, just to refer to the vitamins as well, the Director General also implemented various additional cost containment measures in addition to what was announced by National Treasury to ensure that the department was not overspent. We also had to do some reprioritization of certain funds within our baseline, and we had therefore shifted some funds between units and various items
and this will be reported in detail when we deal with the annual report and the annual financial statements. When you receive that, you will see all the funds shifts and environments in the appropriation accounts of the annual financial statements. So the final outcome of the department was an unspent amount of 50.717 million rand, and the 50.717 per program as well as per economic classification is indicated on slide number 39 and slide number 40. We will not go into all that detail, but the information is there. You'll see there that the total spending of the department, if you include the direct charges, eventually amounted to 64.370 billion rand, with the underspending of 50.717 billion or million, resulting in a 99.9% expenditure for the year. The main area for unspent funds, if one can look at the slide reflecting the spending per economic classification, you see there that compensation of employees, personnel expenditure, had an unspent amount of 47 million rand, and then under goods and services, which mainly reflects our normal operational expenditure, 2.4 million, capital expenditure 600,000, and then a 258,000 rand under transfers, or sorry, 663, of which 258 is linked to universities. Slide number 41 just gives an easy breakdown of the underspending of 50.717 million compared to the 84.584 million that we had in 2015-16. And you can see that in general, in almost all the items, the level of underspending was substantially less than it was in 2015-16. Let me then also specifically emphasize compensation of employees or our salary bill, where we reduced the underspending from 79.2 million in 2015-16 to 47 million in 2016-17. Now this is, Chairperson members, mainly as a result of Program 6, Community Education and Training, and with specific reference to the claims that we receive on the CET educators from our provincial education departments. In this regard, and we will also highlight that when we deal with the annual report and the annual financial statements, quite a number of claims, especially from the province KwaZulu-Natal as well as Eastern Cape, only reached the department after 31 March. And therefore, those amounts cannot be reflected as expenditure for 2016-17. They are included in the financial statements under the provisions and the accruals. The majority of those claims have been paid to date. In terms of the departmental operations, really just mainly because of first that became vacant, or vacancies that could not be filled for which certain administrative provisions were made. Then just to highlight the subsidies to higher education institutions, mainly our universities, the 258,000 rand, which is a very small drop within the total funding for universities, are mainly claims that we did not receive from certain institutions for ad hoc grants which are based on claims specific. That includes, and that is the majority of the 258,000, the claims that we receive for interest and redemption of property loans that they have. This is something that arose from almost 30, 35, 40 years ago, and where they still pay a certain interest and the government still contributes
between 50 and 85% depending on the specific contracts, and we have not received all those claims from all the institutions. The other transfers, which is also a slightly bigger amount, is 256,000, mainly for two items. In the first case, the BRICS, which is the Brussels, or it's not, sorry, not BRICS, it's IPSA, it's the Indian Brazil South Africa Commission, which is managed under UKZN, which we annually budget for, and we have not received any requests for any payments. And in terms of the Treasury rules, those will be an unspent amount and cannot be utilized for any other service. So therefore that is a saving. Then a small portion of that is our membership fee that we pay to the Commonwealth of Learning for the government or country as a whole. And we, at the stage of payment, had a bit of an exchange rate surplus, which resulted in a small saving there. Okay, on slide number 42, we just highlight the levy collections, the direct charge. You will recall that when we reported on the adjusted estimates, that the actual projected levy collection by National Treasury was reduced to 15.4 billion rand. The final collection as at 31 March was 15.233 billion, even slightly less than what was in the adjusted estimates, and the full amount of 15.233 were paid over to the CETAS and to the NSF. Slide number 43 and also partly 44 just mainly focus again on some of the main reasons for the underspending. I will not go into that in detail. I think I covered that mostly. And then slide number 45 and 46, as I indicated, that all varament applied were within the Treasury rules. There are also specific areas where Treasury approval is required, and there's one area where the Minister of Finance had to approve, and all those were done as required. And we just list them for your information where we require Treasury approval and the approval of the Minister of Finance. Chair, that is regarding the finance information. We can hand over to the DG if you would like to make a closing remark, and then back to you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, sir. That's the overall presentation from the chapter. Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Can I just find out, first of all, the first question relates to the financial report. Just clarity, it seems that you have been able to spend up to the very end quite diligently. It's always a trick to manage departmental budgets in such a way that you don't return too much to the fiscus. So is there any of these amounts that there could be special requests for to be transferred to the new financial year, or is this going back to the fiscus? Just clarity about that. Then secondly, CETAS is fine. It is obviously just a calculation adjustment that was done. Chairperson, the second question relates to slide 34, and that is as far as administration is concerned. Just a bit of a concern, because obviously the longer these processes drag on, you can argue it's not eating up the department's money, but I would differ from that approach. The whole matter with regards to disciplinary cases. Can we have an indication how many cases are involved? And if we're saying it must be completed within 90 days, how many cases have dragged on beyond the 90 days, and how long have they been dragging on for? If we've only resolved 22.2% within the 90 days, then I'm really concerned. Yes, we can argue that we've now appointed a new director, but do we have the capacity to drive this? You have, you need labor specialists, because people will take, will cut corners, and unless you have firm procedures and processes in place to make sure that people go and have a fair opportunity for a disciplinary. I don't say that people must be dismissed without the necessary steps, but the point is you must drive this accurately. And I have a concern, it does not appear, because this was a problem that the department confronted last year, and it's still here, it's not been resolved. Chair, I really am very disappointed. Chair, sorry, I just jumped in and I didn't say, you did quite well under the circumstances, so please don't regard this as criticism. It's just some issues that I wanted to have clarity on. Point two is slide 18, Chairperson. Concern about availability of data. If we want to monitor the system and throughput and success, etc., we really need a system with the necessary information. Why has it not been created yet? What is the problem? If we just say data is currently not available to report on the following, what steps are taken to in fact obtain such data? Because ultimately we must monitor the system's efficiency. And if we don't have data, we cannot do that. So please, if we can have that. On the next page, page 19, the fact that we have not made any progress on student accommodation beds, etc., that is a concern. But probably some of the other members will highlight that further. Just wanted to ask, slide 16, program 4, status of targets not achieved. I am a bit concerned if we have within program 4 no capacity to understand what is the departmental mandate and what is a QTCO mandate, then that is really a matter of concern, Chairperson. On that slide, they could not achieve the target because that is not the competency of the department, but it is the competency of the Quality Council. How did that happen? How did that become part of the targets? Lastly, Chair, 1, 2, 3, 4. Lastly was, just want to open that slide. Yes. The issue with in relation to CSIS. CSIS is really getting a slice from levies imposed on businesses with which they have to train people. Now, if you cannot have good corporate governance in those institutions, our target was 100%, which is what it should be, by the way, Chairperson, but we've only achieved 71%. Which are those CSIS that did not perform? And what is the nature of the problem? I mean, is it a matter of serious concern, or is it just basic regulatory non-compliance that is not making a significant impact? We need to know what is the nature of the reason why you could not give them a clean bill of health. Can we please have an indication? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation. Let me first start by uploading the department of the targets, that most of the targets that you have achieved. And my questions will be on community colleges. where you plan to have community education and training infrastructure facilities maintenance report approved by 31st of March 2017. And my question will be whether the city infrastructure maintenance plan has been developed. Out of the report, if it is done, what will be the consolidated required budget for the maintenance? On the CTAS, you had the target of 100% proportion of CTAS meeting standards of good governance, and you did not achieve on that one. What was the problem on that area? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation on the program. On program 3, during the third quarter, the department did not report on the target of Nigerian universities to offer student lecturer qualifications. I would like to know what is the progress in this regard. On page 6, slide 11, on the policy on community service for graduates, you have said that nothing has been done in this regard, but you further go on to say the implementation of the policy will have major financial implications. I would like to know, how did you come to this conclusion without a policy? Again, why was legal advice not sought before you set in the target? And does this mean the budget allocated for the implementation of this target was not utilized? Please explain to us. On TVET, 5 targets were not reported on due to unavailability of data. As the committee now, we're finding ourselves in a very difficult situation. We're not able to assess whether the investment made towards this target was used effectively and efficiently. You are just putting us in a very difficult situation now, because it's strange that the program spent 100% of allocated budget, but not achieve all those targets. Of concern is non-achievement of MDP or MTSF targets. So please clarify that one. The last one, Chair, is on program 4 as well, on TVET. I would like to know, it's on slide 17, where the DG has approved the appointment of the fund and human resource management service provider. I would like to know what will be the cost of the fund and human resource management service provider. How much is it going to cost this fund and human resource management service provider? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to follow up with two questions. One of them has been raised by Honorable Mthunu. It's on page 11 of your dominant page 6. I have an understanding that before you set targets, you role-play them in your strat plan. And I want to believe that the strat plan is a considered executive exercise to enable the executive to focus and to be able to know exactly what is possible in the pending financial year. Now, when some of the ideas that you bring about in those exercises and later into your plans are inconsistent and they require different advice, it looks like you are actually not aware
through those aggressive exercises, put the team together, DG, to run down things according to priorities and what is feasible. Because for you to retreat on some of the plans that you have already forecast, it's actually a bad exercise. In fact, my English is very soft. I should have gone harder on you on this one. But I guess it's your lucky day. On the other one is the... And then the other one is the review or the revised funding framework for education. I think between you and us, we now know what are the biggest problems of the higher education system. And this exercise in particular is very urgent, because if we call every institution here, they will tell that they are underfunded at some point, somehow, somewhere. And we are not able to cope with the extent to which this has affected the system from international banks. We know that at the level of student services, student financial aid, we know that those are the three criteria. But also we know there's a growing area called maintenance. And after building maintenance, there will be another area, energy mix, because universities might have to diversify in their energy so as to enable management of the prices of electricity and many other sources of energy to try and stabilize the manner in which they could cost manage some of the things they could. Now, if you take longer on this exercise, you might find that the number keeps on drawing themselves, and you will end up with numbers that you will not be able to even project reasonably. So it's important to contain them as they come and be able to focus them to the university system so that people know what is feasible. Because right now, anyone is able to draw any number, and the system is going to collapse if it's not able to project itself correctly.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I have a concern with quite a number of the targets where the department now reports and say, but data has not been available. And there is the saying that if you can't manage, but you can't measure. Now, for example, on page 12, and I'm perhaps going to jump around, system performance, community education and training colleges. Then you just say data on the performance of this sector is not available to report on. Now, also, there's another page where you speak about throughput rates, page 9, slide number 18. Data is currently not available to report on the following: certification rates in TVET qualifications, certification rates in TVET qualifications in 6, TVET throughput rate, funded NCV level 4 students obtaining qualification within the stipulated time, etc. Now, Chairperson, these measurements or these indicators seem to me extremely important and extremely basic ones. And I believe that there is a real neglect of basic focusing in the department. If the department is not measuring some of the most important indicators to my mind as to the performance of our TVET and our CET sector in this country. So if the department could just tell us why have they put these up as targets, and why is it that something which I believe is relatively simple to calculate, surely the number of people that have enrolled for the examinations, the percentage of passes, the percentage that eventually qualified for a certificate must be available. And how can you manage and how can you fund programs where such basic information is apparently they're not available to the very department that should be managing this? And then, Chair, there's also one other concern that I want to raise.
the proportion of CETAs meeting standards of good governance, the target's been 100%, the actual achievement is only 71%. My question is, again, could the department not have done better by managing from their side the position of the CETAs, so that at least we do have the good governance, which to my mind has been a real concern of this committee and many others for many, many years. And Chair, then just lastly, if somebody could just explain to me what is meant by a conduct policy. The Minister approved a conduct policy for general education training certificate for adults for public comment, and that word conduct policy has come up more than once. Please ignore, excuse my ignorance. Thank you.
Are you done, Honourable Member?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The DG, there's one document that you sent to us, which we requested, which are the recommendations that the committee has made in its BRRR process. May I suggest that you combine your answers that you're going to give to the questions to that, because there's a lot of overlap in the questions and what you have put together in this document. You can do that to us. The second one that I want to say is, DG, it cannot be right that the committee receive a report that says you don't have the figures, or that you're going to say it in the annual report. You're here now. And the purpose of being here now is to do exactly that. That's what the quarterly report is all about. It's not about postponing the answer to when you come with the annual report. But more than that, you're on to Treasury. You gave answers to Treasury, so why are you giving up? Those answers to explain yourself, well, why don't you just pick this and tell us? Because it cannot be right that you don't have answers for us, but you do have answers as far as we are concerned. So can you help to clear up that matter? If you don't have anything here now, you actually have to send it to the committee. You actually have, that's the purpose of having a quarterly report to the committee, and why we do oversight on yourself. There's another matter. If we compare what you said in your strat plan on the administration and what you are saying now, it's different. Now, which one must we follow? We follow the strat plan rather than what you are saying. But more than that, DG, isn't it time that we say that something else needs to be devised around the fact that your underspending is in administration all the time? And in our view, this one is an important one, because it speaks to your capacity. Now, if you do not have capacity in the department, then this one will come up all the time. And it's not a small amount of money. It's not that you spend less than what you did last year. That's not the issue. The issue is this one is still a sore thumb that are standing out. What decisive plan are being put in place around this one? Because we can't wait for you to come in later in the year and speak to this one. We think that maybe what you should do to us here is to give us similarly an update on what progress are being made. We don't want any of your money to go back to Treasury. We want you to spend all of it, and some of this money you
sorely need. So just walk us through what radical plans have been put in place in this instance. The last one is on the community service for graduates. We are informed that health has quite an issue around this matter. And maybe you should help us to make us understand what the difficulties are here. Is it something that is achievable or not? Instead of having the same report on this matter. This is quite an important thing because it speaks to what we are trying to achieve with those that we bring through the system and where we say that they need to give something back in the form of the public service, in the kind of program that should be there. Via all the graduates. Now, it might not be achievable, or maybe it is achievable, maybe there's a finance problem. I think we must, maybe we should just understand. If it's something that is not, then do we require to change a policy here or something like that? I think we really just want to ask, what is it? Because we think it's not a bad thing. It's a good, it's something that places, that gives people commitment to why we've taken it through the system and what it is that they simply just must offer to the country. So if we can have responses to those aspects, thank you.
No, thank you very much, sir. The questions are quite substantial. In nature, as they are presented to us by the honorable members. But perhaps, if I may start by this question of policy and the decisions then that gets taken. The policy determination is not necessarily the competence of the administration. Policy is taken at an organizational as well as executive level. Then, as a department, we then internalize and put those policy decisions in the process of the administration with a view of then we feedback in respect to what are the technical challenges that are there in respect to the implementation of every respective policy decision that has been brought to our attention. For instance, in respect to the question of community service for graduates. It's a very good policy intent and policy pronouncement that we had to work on it quite very hard in implementing it. Now, at the point of implementation, in engagement with various clusters in government, including DPSA as well as the Treasury, we conducted a social economic impact assessment which indicated that in order to be able to place 160,000 graduates from university on a program like this would cost government on stipends and the tools of trade that is required around 10 billion. And that 10 billion is not available. Therefore, the policy can be implemented, taking into consideration other pressing priority needs of government. I think it clarifies Now, in respect to the question of the availability of data, the sector that we always profess to have matured in terms of systems and processes is mainly the university sector. The TVET college sector, CET sector, those who are having numerous challenges that were put to the attention of the portfolio committee, not only in respect to a data of this nature, but also in respect to control environment insofar as financial management is concerned. That's why, amongst interventions, we have to partner with CICA for the deployment of chartered accountants to actually assist in regularizing and stabilizing the control environment at the college level, amongst others. Now, in respect to this one, the question at hand, the non-availability of data in respect to TVET colleges, insofar as NCV and native courses are concerned, it's linked to CETA backlog in certification, as well as the determination of the food rate, you know, out of the system. It's the work that we are currently involved in, together with CETA as well as UMADU, in order in the system to get a reliable data. But the supreme priority is on the clearing of backlog with respect to certification, whilst we are building the capacity of the system to be able to generate the information which is required out of it. That's the work that we're doing, which is quite intense at the present moment, as it was reflected in the previous presentation and the interrogation that the Honourable Member put through to our attention. Now, the qualification of TVET College lecturers, the program has started. UWSU has been accredited by Council on Higher Education to offer higher education post-grad diploma in TVET College. Students have enrolled this year. I think they received about 50 applications. With about 15 individuals registered at the present moment. The other 11 institutions have actually submitted their documentation to the CET for accreditation, of which is being assessed at the present moment, so that the first intake in all those institutions is implemented with effect from 2018. That is the next following academic year. Now, the question of understanding, I think the CFO tried to explain this in part, in that the 47 million in the name which has been spent is related to the question of examination insofar as claims are concerned by markers, examiners and moderators. Now, at a point where claims are not submitted to the department, we cannot process it. Now, the unfortunate thing for the financial year 2016-17, we are receiving now claims for that amount in this current financial year. So these are the things that we are trying to sort out with the treasure. But I guess it's related also to the question of some systemic incapacity at college level in processing, you know, claims of this nature, amongst others. Then in respect to other areas, I think understanding is a bit minimal. We're not saying we're happy about it, but it's the explanatory. For instance, if a court says anything filled, you can't pay somebody in anticipation of filling the post. So that money that you retain as savings, which gets accrued to you at credit to the system, which necessarily is not a bad thing, but if then the rate of unfilled posts is quite high, then it becomes a problem. Of which I think in that one we are trying to manage quite very tightly in the department. But the CFO and the DGC corporate services may come in to explain as to what are we actually doing in addressing HR related matters in the department at the present moment. I think my colleagues would come. The underfunding, Chair. The question of underfunding of the system will sound really like a broken record. We have indicated to this committee that funding in subsidies at university level has declined over the past 15 years. We're making that presentation in 2015. We said it has declined from about 70% to around 38% on subsidies. And universities alone, on deferred maintenance, the amount has accumulated up to about 25 billion. So we're talking about big money, over and above the current challenges that are there in at the present moment. So the question of underfunding of the system is not a secret. The only thing that we are battling is to try to mobilize more resources in order to compensate and address this shortfall, which is carried through time and again, including at NEFA, for instance, within the current cap of 122,000 rand per annum per family income, because we are having a shortfall there at the present moment. So the funding pressures are quite huge in the system as a whole. We agree with the honorable member in respect to that question. Yeah. On CETAS, we come in 71%, why not 100%?
Thank you very much, DG, Chairperson and honorable members. We developed this instrument for the first time and we implemented it on the 1st April 2016, this instrument on good governance. At the end of the year, we started now then looking into compliance with all CETAs. Issues they are raising, or what we have discovered, some of them refuse to submit evidence. So they are saying that information is confidential. So that is why they could not render it to the department. Another area, it was with regard to declaration of interest in board meetings by board members. Another area was a failure to develop action minutes and plan to address AG findings. And some of the minutes, of course, of board meetings were not signed. And we have taken these areas quite very serious. So in the main, there were 6 CETAs out of 21 CETAs. Just on Friday, we had a meeting with all CEOs, administrators, as well as CETA chairpersons. So we've raised this, the importance of good governance and compliance, especially when we are saying to them they must submit a portfolio of evidence. And some of them, originally, they said to us they met all the requirements, but when we said share the evidence, now then it's only then that we have identified six of them who could not comply fully with this instrument of good governance. So we do have the list of them, Chairperson, and then we can also furnish you with all those six sitters. Thanks very much.
Are you saying you don't have the names with you?
I do. It's Bassett, it's P. Sitter, it's LG Sitter, it's Chieta, it's Construction Sitter, it's Services Sitter.
We'll see them next week. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DJ. I'm responding to the questions they asked on slide number 34. The first question there is around the cases, the 22% cases that were resolved. The total number of cases we're reporting on is 18, and we resolved 4 within 90 days. However, most of those cases have since been now dealt with. Now, Chairperson, I do want to talk about the reasons why it is impossible to meet the deadlines, is postponement, either by the chairpersons themselves or the witnesses or the official who, you know, who's implicated. And the department leaves the processes entirely on the hands of the chairperson because it's an independent process. If the chairperson grants postponement, the department cannot say no, don't grant it, because they exercise their own, judgment in relation to the reasons given for postponement. But we're talking of more than 30,000 employees and 18 cases. In the past, we had more than 600 cases that we inherited from colleges, and we've wiped all those cases. So I think whilst we're saying that we're not doing well, but a lot, Chairperson, is happening in dealing with, and we, as we reported, we're increasing our capacity. We're putting now people at a regional level who can assist and support colleges, because the problem is the colleges. They are either lacking in terms of the skills, you know, to deal with the cases, or they just don't have the confidence to deal with the complex cases. They were given delegations to deal with these cases, but they always want to, you know, to call upon the department to come and support them. On the general capacity constraints in the administration branch, we all know that the compensation budget has been kept in the midst of the department having taken over 38,000 employees. We are working around the clock, Chairperson, here in order to at least provide a service, but it is a general problem, both in finance and in HR. We are severely constrained. The DG talks about underfunding. It is hitting administration quite badly. The last point I want to say, to improve recruitment, we are still considering using service providers to help us, especially on the processing of the applications. Chair, on the 12th of May, we received more than 30,000 applications in the department. We don't even have space to store them. Hence, we are now resorting to using service providers to assist to fill the critical vacancies, but we are also working on an e-recruitment system which will do away with paper that we are receiving. I think we've also put other ways of dealing with the problem in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, just to respond further on the issue around the savings and then the specific question around rollovers, the the amount that we unspent for compensation of employees, the 47 million, cannot be rolled over to the 2017-18 financial year. That's a treasury regulation. And in terms of the rules issued by Treasury for rollover, all the other amounts and the specific services linked to that are too small and does not qualify. Transfers, for example, can also not be rolled over because it must be used for that specific purpose, which expired on 31 March 2017, so they cannot be requested to roll over as well.
Thank you, TG, Chair and honourable members. Just to provide clarity, the conduct policy simply is around the conduct, management and administration of assessment and examinations. So it's a policy document that will then deal with assessment and examinations. The other question raised has to deal with the maintenance report. This relates to the establishment of the college head offices and therefore the infrastructure that we've either have from partners or that we've actually are using. So the maintenance report deals with that particular aspect. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, sir. If I may just on this question of the CTAS in respect to the question of governance. This tool we are using, we introduced for the first time, just to gauge as to how in the conduct in respect to government is happening in the CTAS and what lessons we should be learning from that. Then after we have introduced and implemented it, I think it's the first meeting that we had all the stakeholders, that is the chairs, administrators, as well as CEOs, in engaging on this matter. And I must say it was really a fruitful discussion on Friday. And we agreed that we are going to have a follow-up session. There is no resistance, really, in respect to us working together on this matter. I thought it's important to clarify that matter, and as we're engaged in clarifying all the issues, all entities are actually on board, and we're quite confident that will improve quite dramatically in respect to this question. So I just wanted to assure the honourable members about the processes as well as the attitude of the sitter, even in respect to those who couldn't meet entirely all the requirements that we have complied with. There is no resistance in respect to the measures that were put in place. Thank you very much.
Can I take it off for members? All your questions were answered. Your question was not answered on the board.
I'm happy if you want to have another round of questions. No new question, but perhaps I missed the response by the department on the lack of information available to the department. The fact that we can't get throughput rates, the fact that we can't get the pass rates, the fact that the community education and training sector, you know, there's just no information available.
They did answer. But we'll ask them to refresh. Honourable Kitana.
Chair. I shocked you, sorry. Chair, just on the CTAS, if we can request the gentleman to go through the again and mention in full, because these acronyms at times for myself, they confuse me at times. But I must also say about them that we are not just happy that a CTAS can say I've complied and it is confident. confidential, what confidential is? This secret is where things go wrong. Even in the public concept, being kept secret to the public, and why don't you speak? It belongs to the public, and if the people who own it can be kept away, because you're keeping them away, you're distancing it from them now, if you keep it secret. Why secret? What is the embarrassment? Because if it is a good thing that you are doing, you should tell them, and you know you'll be proud to tell them. So I'm just saying, I'm personally just not happy, because that is where things fundamentally go wrong. You know, when we were underground in the past, we could understand, because we were suppressed, we were not allowed to do things above ground. Now we are above ground. Why would you want to do things underground?
On that one. I love to have heard what the DG is the ultimate diplomat. He's making friends with everybody. I'm happy to see that he's fulfilling that role. Just as far as accountability is concerned of CDEP, can I just perhaps have a clear indication? For some reason, I believe CDEP are not listed in the PFMA. They're not in the schedules to the Public Finance Management Act. Am I correct or am I wrong? Because that could be a problem that should actually be addressed. If they're not listed as public entities, I think it is a problem, because obviously they are working with public funds. Honorable Kikana is correct. And they must be held accountable. Now, if we can convince them, but the system has been in place for so long, if they still resist transparency of all their decisions, then there is a problem. But I think I concur with Honorable Takana that we must keep them accountable. Thank you.
Please refresh the member.
Thank you very much. Before
you do, and I think there was one issue that you left out, DG, and that has a relation with the previous question that I spoke about, and that is the irregular expenditure. In the previous report that you gave us, you promised something, so we didn't hear you this time in the report. So if you can speak to that.
All right, no, CFO will pick up on that one. If I may just clarify these two questions. Now, in respect to the availability of data, I think we have explained this in respect to one, the sectors within the portfolio of the Department of Higher Education and Training, universities, their systems are mature, they are functioning quite well. Now, when you come to TVET quality, as well as T, the systems of a variety of nature, that's what we are still working on at the present moment. It's in respect with TVET quality control environment, which we became aware of through the work that we are doing with AG, as well as SPICA project that we have initiated as a department with a view of building capacity for financial management at TVET College level, which was quite a huge problem. Because when we scanned the environment, what we discovered was that there are no controls in place in terms of financial management, HR, governance, and we sought them to intervene and improve in all those areas. We detailed actions that need to be taken and what kind of capacity that needs to be. Hence, all of them now, they are having functioning
councils, we keep on beefing up the expertise at management level, as well as teaching, learning, and training in there. I think that's the first thing we need to clarify. Then, secondly, in respect to this question of data, we indicated that it's linked to the SITA backlog processes, which are impacting in processing certificates as well as throughput rates. So there is work which is currently happening in respect to improve the capacity of IT insofar as data processing in TVET College is concerned, with certification as well as being able to generate information in respect to throughput. That's what we are working on at the present moment. When you get to CET, it's a different animal altogether. One, just basic things, conditions of service. Each province has its own conditions of service, and you would guess that perhaps other conditions of service were really not supposed to have been allowed to happen. For instance, there would be educators who have been there for the past 20 years, but who can't get pension money because they've been on contract, which would be reviewed or renewed every year. So they are close to retirement, others. When they retire, they become the burden of social service because they don't have any pension accrued to them over all these years. So conditions of service, and also the question of data, and the scan that was conducted by AG, which AG advised us as a department not to take this function, was that it is a disclaimer. So I advise you, don't take it. But we have to take it with a view that we'll begin to put measures in place and work them through a stage of optimal functionality. That is the journey we have just started with them at the present moment, starting from conditions of service control environment and the data processing and all other related matters that are required for any entity or institution to function quite properly. Now, the second question in respect to CETAs. CETAs are a Schedule 3 of the PMFA, so they can't escape that. So all our engagement systems are within that context. What I was simply trying to do was to clarify in detail the nature of engagement that we had with them and their responses in respect to the areas that we found that they have erred in them, and assessing their attitudes in respect to those. That's why confidently I say it looks we'll be able to get along going forward, have clarified quite a number of issues, and we still have some other sessions that are to follow. I don't think honorable members really have to worry much about it. It's a matter that we are hammering with them, and there is consensus in respect to how every one of us should account and conduct himself or herself throughout this process, insofar as governance issues are concerned, including financial management in that respect. CFO?
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, I think the regular expenditure you referred to was the one that we were looking at the previous time regarding community education and training. We are still busy finalizing the investigation. However, by the end of March, for purposes of the financial statements, we did identify four payments, a total amount of 345,000 rand. which was regarding some legal services being procured, which were not following through the normal ECM processes. Those monies were then identified as irregular and will be reported as such in the financial statements. Our internal audit unit is currently looking into all the details around those matters. It is basically all linked to one specific case. It is not four different cases and one service provider that's involved in that process. And we hope to have a report as soon as possible. At this point, I cannot say when we will have the final report on that investigation, but the matter is in progress.
The only other matter was, what are the full names of this interview?
I think it's the one that in follow up was pronouncing, yeah, which is there. But see, what I was trying to indicate, the rest, that could be a bit premature in engaging at that level while there are these processes that we have identified.
No, did you get names, but it was an acronym, and the member said, please give me the full names because I don't know who PCTA is. Who is the PCTA? Full name. LG, full name.
Yes, we'll give all 21 of the chairmen. Oh.
Six.
Passport is finance and accounting sector. PCTA is a public sector sector. LG sector is a local government. CETA is a chemical industries sector. Okay, this one was in police construction sector. But then in short, it's CETA, it's CETA. And then another one is services. That's the full name, services CETA.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Honourable members, I'm sure we must thank the department and their team for both presentations, the earlier one and the very detailed one now. I've got no other reason to keep you here on the member, but to thank all of you very much for your attendance, both the department and the member.